Welcome, everybody, into Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
We are live, and good to see all of you joining us from around the world today. We've got a very busy show for you. We tend to cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. The mainstream media is covering one side of what's happening with the Middle East right now and a potential war with Iran. They're basically being cheerleaders for a potential war with Iran right now. We're going to show you that. And of course, the Biden administration's response, there's been a couple of big developments over the last few hours that we want to get you to and get you brought up to speed on.
Plus in Ukraine, they're saying, don't worry about it. We handled that corruption problem we've had for, a decade. We're good. Keep sending us more money. Also, our military has miraculously quadrupled. I don't know how that happened. Zelensky's saying he has a million troops strong.
Where'd they come from?
We're going to go through all of this because, again, we continue to be force-fed a war based on lies.
We're also going to take you to Maui in Lahaina tonight to get an update on what is going on with the people that lost their homes, their businesses, their livelihood, hundreds of people potentially killed as a result of those wildfires. We're going to check in and find out why has the Biden administration largely abandoned these people in Hawaii. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now.
Thank you so much for joining Redacted. Hey, I want to let you know, if you are a subscriber to the Redacted newsletter, there's been some changes specifically in the Gmail client. So if you use Gmail, you may have noticed that your newsletter showed up in a different folder. They're making some changes to Gmail right now. I noticed mine was put in my promotions tab instead of my inbox. So my mother said she didn't see it because hers was put somewhere else. So if you didn't see it, we did write it today. I promise you. Search for it and then either mark it as not spam or drag it into your most important inbox is what I would ask of you, because we work really hard on the newsletter, which is meant to go with this show. So we're going to talk about a bunch of news today, but I figured I'd tell you that quickly about the newsletter in case you're saying, where the heck was it? Because the Redacted newsletter is a daily newsletter, Monday through Thursday. It comes out the same days that this show comes out, and we write it so that you can read stories for yourself. We try really hard to link you to original content, original sources, so you can read not a spin, but something that you can decide for yourself. It's totally free. Nothing's behind a paywall. We don't upsell you anything. Redacted.inc is the newsletter. And again, I just want to make sure that if you didn't get it today, you go looking because of some major changes that were rolled out to Gmail.
Someone in the chat just says, only fools use Gmail.
I get it. Yes, but
what do you guys use these days? Let us know in the comments here. Do you guys use Proton Mail?
I mean, they're spying on us, right? Yes, we know this. Yeah. But they're
saying you probably just dissed 80% of the internet.
Right. That
Yeah. It's a huge, email. I mean, a lot of businesses use G Suite, you know?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, you might not even know they're using Gmail, but they're using a variation of it through their G Suite protocol.
I mean, look, I don't love all of what Google services offer, but hey, we're here, you know, we're on YouTube. YouTube is a Google service. We're in the landscape that we're given at this moment. So I get it. At the same time, we know they're spying on us.
Yeah. So please check out the newsletter. Also, I wanted to point out, yes, we are live. People want to know if we're live. We are. And please let us know if you're new to the show. Let us know if you're new. Just say, hey, I'm new. Welcome in. And we will welcome you with open arms.
How can we prove to them that we're live? If I pinch you really hard?
No, because you could pinch me on tape.
Oh,
I mean, I don't know.
That just proves you're not dreaming.
I mean, I guess you could look at my watch. You could look at the time.
Hold up today's newspaper. Do you have today's newspaper handy?
Right. Yeah. Truman wins. Or Dewey wins. Yeah. Dewey beats Truman. Anyway, yeah, let us know if you're new here. If you are, welcome. You know, we try to navigate this crazy clown world together, and we don't have all the answers, but we sure as heck attempt to. And it seems like the mainstream media and politicians in the United States are actively trying to push us towards World War III. I mean, it seems like it's such an easy thing to do to not get us into World War III.
Yeah.
Like if we were running things, or we had a group of Redacted viewers who was running things, like here's what not to do. Here's how not to get us all killed. But they don't seem to want to do that. So let's talk about it.
Right now, not getting anyone involved in a war.
Yeah, not killing anyone. You haven't killed anyone.
I'm not killing anybody. I'm not asking anybody for money for bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they're working so hard overtime to get Nikki Haley like boosted up on social media, because they want her so bad because she has the Lindsey Graham kind of mindset.
Oh, Lindsey Graham, we're going to get to him.
Yeah. All right, let's do it, shall we? So why did President Biden give $6 billion to Iran a month before October 7th, the October 7th attack in Israel? And this evening, members of Congress are now calling for an all-out war against Iran after three American service members were killed and 35 total wounded. Something isn't adding up here. Something seems really, really fishy. We'll get back to that part of the story in a moment, because it turns out the United States loves putting men in harm's way in the Middle East. It's something they've been doing for years. It turns out when you illegally occupy fields in Syria or you put Americans in Iraq, even though Iraq doesn't want you there, says it's illegal, get out of our country, which they did again today, by the way.
Syria, same story.
Syria, exactly. Jordan. Something bad is eventually going to happen to these people, and that's exactly what happened, of course, last night. A spokesman for the Jordanian government. So initially, Jordan came out, the country of Jordan, and said, no, this attack where three American service members were killed, that didn't happen on Jordanian soil. That is not true. They have now walked that back. Jordan did confirm that it actually did happen on Jordanian soil, and it's right there at the border in a small U.S. military outpost called Tower 22. Now, this tower, interestingly, if you really dive in, you understand like what's going on here, overlooks about 15,000 Syrian refugees who are basically living in tents. It's almost like a concentration camp. You got these like American service members there in a tower in this facility, a couple hundred of them, overlooking a 15,000 strong Syrian refugee camp. Why are they displaced? Why are they living in tents? Why do we need to have a tower? Why do we need to have an outpost in the middle of nowhere looking after 15,000 Syrian refugees? So these troops were killed, 25 more injured. It happened sort of in the middle of the night. And according to U.S. Central Command, these 25 service members were wounded in the attack. This is a massive attack on American forces any way you slice it. Why are they there in the first place? It's an illegal occupation of this region, Syria and Iraq and Jordan. So did these men die in vain? How do you tell the American families? Like, how do you go to the families of these servicemen who were killed or wounded? And wounded, perhaps with massive concussion or, you know, repercussions of concussion attacks that cause brain injuries that we might not even know about for a while. Well, here's how you console these families. You send in White House spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre to offer her condolences. I mean, these words are wise. Listen.
What I will say, our deepest, obviously our deepest condolences go out, and our heartfelt condolences go out to the families who lost three brave folks who are military folks, who are brave, who are always fighting, who are fighting on behalf and of this administration, of the American people. Obviously, more importantly, we lost those souls.
Yeah.
Helpful.
Feel better?
Is it that hard for her to say a gender? Like, is that what that was about? Like, we just can't say a gender because, you know, yeah, men and women.
I don't know. She's like, you can see like the wheels spinning. Like, they're fighting on behalf of who? Because they're not fighting. Do you feel safer? Like, in the United States of America, do you feel safer that these men are occupying an outpost overlooking 15,000 Syrian refugees illegally in the Middle East? Like, do you feel any safer? No. I would feel safer if those 35 individuals were at the U.S. southern border and they were in a tower. I would feel safer then, actually. I don't feel safer that they're over there. In fact, they're sitting ducks. So I don't know what her wheels are spinning. That they're there to protect the Biden administration. She basically says they're there to protect the Biden administration. They're there to protect us.
Those things are mutually exclusive.
Right.
Like, no, they're protecting politicians, not the American people.
Well, this sounds a lot like, you know, if I were to break into a shop at night after they were closed, and I slip and fall and break my ankle, and I sue the shop and I win, and nobody ever asked me, what were you doing there to begin with?
Yeah.
Like, they're just completely ignoring the fact that we don't belong there.
Right, exactly.
What the hell are we doing there?
But don't ask that question. And the media is not even asking that question.
That sounds allowable in American litigation.
Maybe. I don't know, but neocons certainly aren't.
It and is.
It's predictable, right? This response from the neocons is absolutely predictable. The response from the mainstream media is predictable. Instead of asking for a total removal of American forces from these areas, which I didn't hear any member of the mainstream media even asking these questions, by the way. Not at all. Senator Tom Cotton sending this message out. The only answer to these attacks must be devastating military retaliation against Iran's terrorist forces, both in Iran and across the Middle East. Anything less will confirm Joe Biden as a coward unworthy of being commander in chief. Oh, really? Okay. He's already
been. You go first, then.
Yeah. Strap on, strap up. So when you need neocons on television to confirm this attack on Iran, there's Yosemite Sam is the first person you call, former Ambassador John Bolton.
If there were ever a moment, and frankly, the moment started about 3 months ago, but if there were ever a moment now when to show American determination and take a significant step to reestablish deterrence, the president's response has to be to strike targets in Iran.
Oh, yeah, we have to. Jason Brodsky, also a think tank neocon, says this: Mr. President, this crosses a line. You have to hit IRGC terrorists and hit them hard. Aim for targets that hold strategic significance for Iran's regime, not merely its proxies. Aim for the head of the octopus, not merely its tentacles.
Can we just leave that up for a second? I want to ask you, do you think that's going to get you into heaven? Putting things like that on Twitter.
When you're at the gates.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going through the review process. Mr. Brodsky, we'd like to see what you've accomplished in your life. Oh.
I advocated for killing a lot of brown people.
Yeah, you've wanted to kill a lot of innocent people.
Which
a lot
would
of
then retaliate on my own people.
I know I've asked this question before, but has that helped? The U.S. has been doing this for a really, really long time. And what problem have we ever solved by doing this? I can't think of a single time we've ever done something like this and the problem was fixed.
Zero. I mean, I've made the point here about the Middle East, and any time we've attacked a country in the Middle East, it's always come back to hurt the United States. There's never been a strategic positive in us attacking any country in the Middle East.
Yes, please refer to the piece that we did on the Orlando nightclub shooting. Had nothing to do with being gay, had everything to do with retaliation for attacks in the Middle East. Please go back and watch that piece.
And even our regime changes, our sanctions, like none of that stuff that we use works for good. Like nothing helps.
No, and it's not going to. So, you know, what is the, you know, it's like the repeating something over and over and hoping for a different outcome, the definition of insanity. And that's exactly what we continue to do, hoping for a different outcome. But we don't actually hope for a different outcome. The outcome we get is as a result of the military industrial complex being enriched. So that is the outcome they want. They don't want to have a positive impact on the world. So, you know, all you need to do is turn to Lindsey Graham. So immediately, of course, upon this news, Lindsey Graham, Senator, South Carolina, hit Iran now. Hit them hard. And then Senator John Cornyn, target Tehran.
Same question. How are you going to answer for that at the pearly gates?
So I love Tucker's response. Tucker tweeted this right afterwards. Watch. Can you see that?
F-word lunatics.
F-ing lunatics, Tucker says. Exactly. And CBS is, by the way, CBS News. If you wondered where the mainstream media is in all of this, I just want you to watch this amazing piece of video that came across my desk today. CBS News cheerleading a war with Iran also. Listen to this CBS News anchor essentially saying, hey, when are you guys going to attack Iran? Like, I'm getting emotional about it. When are you guys going to have the backbone to launch a war? Come on already. Listen.
I want to follow up on this question of Iran and Iran-backed. There's no confusion from the White House's point of view about who is ultimately responsible for this, and that is the country of Iran. They're not hitting proxies of ours. They're hitting us. Are we going to hit them at last?
Again, I'm simply not going to get ahead of the president's decision space. We're not looking for a war with Iran. We're not looking for a conflict broader in the region. We're doing everything we can to try to take the tensions down.
You know it's bad when John Kirby wants to de-escalate.
Right, when John Kirby's like, whoa, 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 CBS. CBS. When are we going to attack them at
finally,
last? When are we going to attack them finally at last? When are we going to do it? John Kirby's like, whoa, I'm a warmonger, but even CBS. That's like, he's like, what the fuck's going on over there
at
CBS?
That's bad.
It's like CBS going full Arlo Guthrie. You know, like, I want to kill.
Like, yeah, exactly. God. It's like, that's what their job is? Edward R. Murrow, like, I mean, rolling over in his grave.
Where is your conscience, people?
So there are two reasons these war pigs want to attack Iran. Of course, one is money. And one is Israel. We'll get to the Israel part in just a second here. But Senator Lindsey Graham, of course, has a long history of taking money from these defense contractors. Of course, he famously talked about, wanting them to fund him exclusively. In fact, if you read this, here's a great piece that dives deeply into all of the defense contractors that have leveled money in his back pocket over the years. The super PAC supporting the presidential campaign of Senator Lindsey Graham raised $2.9 million through the end of June. A significant portion of which came from defense contractors that stand to gain from Graham's advocacy for greater military intervention around the world and increased defense spending. He even said this publicly. This is quoting Senator Lindsey Graham. If I were a defense contractor, I'd be big time for Lindsey Graham. He's speaking of himself in the third person because I've been forward leaning on rebuilding our military.
Natalie doesn't like that.
George is getting angry. So then check out the Babylon Bee. I think this headline kind of says it all. Lindsey Graham calls on the United States to bomb every country in the world.
There's just not one that he misses. You know?
I think it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. He's got, his dance card is full.
So I thought it was interesting. There's a couple of pieces that have come out over the past few days, in the past few weeks, actually, about the United States stance in some of these occupied territories. And in fact, where the U.S. forces are basically left sitting there like total sitting ducks right now on purpose. Even the Biden administration knows this is true because in the New York Times did a whole piece on this where they, in fact, quoted the Biden administration. I'm just going to quote the New York Times now. The latest attack on American troops in the region over the weekend resulted in no deaths. This was like a few days ago. But President Biden and his advisors worry that it's, quote, only a matter of time. Whenever a report of strikes arrive at the White House Situation Room, officials wonder whether this will be the one that forces a more decisive retaliation and results in a broader regional war. But this is the pattern of U.S. interventionism of the past more than two decades. Intervention begets more intervention, then begets U.S. occupation at some far-flung outpost. Militant attack on said outpost begets greater escalation and yet more intervention. It seems the cycle never ends, perhaps by design, as the continuing legacy of the neocons GWOT, which kicked off the era of the Iraq and Afghanistan invasions. So, pretty eye-opening piece in the New York Times admitting intervention begets more intervention. And these people are sitting ducks, these American service members who are in these places waiting. Why are they there in the first place?
It's also a haunting image to think of them sitting there waiting, like, oh, did any of our guys get killed? Not yet? Okay. Like, if you think of those people as your children or people you care about, then you're like, well, let's get them out.
Yeah.
Because if we're waiting for that to happen, let's get them out first.
Where is Uncle Johnny stationed?
Who cares about Uncle Johnny?
Uncle Johnny's, 23 years old, 25 years old. He's stationed in some little outpost in Syria. What's he doing there? Is he making me safer, Mommy? Go to school. Go to school. Don't ask questions about Uncle Johnny because we can't tell you if he's making you any safer because, no, in fact, it's making it worse for you. Go ahead, David.
I have friends that were in Iraq, and the thing is, like, they indoctrinate these soldiers to think that there's this huge enemy over there, but a lot of them then came back against the war because once you get over there, you realize you're not there for the reason you were told. And so it's like they're over there, and they probably have zero idea of why. Like what they're even doing.
Yes.
Right. They don't know. They don't know at all why they're there. So a full-scale attack on Iran is, of course, exactly what Israel wants. This is the other big piece of the puzzle, right? So the money is one big piece of it, why we are there, why Senator Lindsey Graham wants a full-scale war. He wants the money. He wants to enrich the military-industrial complex. The other side of it is the sycophantic relationship with Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel, of course. Israel has been calling for preemptive attacks on Iran for decades. They told us as much. They told us to attack Saddam Hussein. We listened. We did exactly what they wanted. We did that on faulty intelligence, of course. Now they want us to attack Iran. Just listen to Denis Kucinich. This was 2002 when Denis Kucinich asked Benjamin Netanyahu in front of Congress, should we preemptively attack any other countries? What do you think?
You talk about a network of terror. Are there any other nations that you would recommend that the United States launch preemptive attacks upon at this point?
No, the issue is not. First of all, are there other nations that are developing nuclear weapons? Yes.
Should we launch other preemptive attacks?
First, let me say what they are, and then let me make a suggestion how to proceed.
Thank you.
The answer is categorically yes. The two nations that are vying, competing with each other, who will be the first to achieve nuclear weapons, is Iraq and Iran. And Iran, by the way, is also outpacing Iraq in the development of ballistic missile systems that they hope will reach the eastern seaboard of the United States within 15 years. So I guess that doesn't include California, but includes Washington. But what it does, a third nation, by the way, is Libya as well. Libya is, while no one is watching.
Okay. Yeah.
So just
what about the ones you have, sir? What about the ones that Israel has that we've known about since 1989?
So
did they ask that?
Yeah. So if you're keeping score at home, of those three nations he's mentioned here, how many have we already completed for him? He asked us to take out, you know, Libya. Libya is a big concern for Israel.
Check.
We got that one for you. We killed Gaddafi for you. Iraq, we hung Saddam Hussein for you. So we took care of Iraq for you. So I guess the last one on the list is Iran. Like, what makes any of us sitting here thinking that that's not going to happen tonight? We do their bidding, right? So something is going to happen. And the Biden administration tonight says that they, by the way, Iran came out this afternoon and said, we had absolutely nothing to do with this attack. Believe them or not. Saying we had absolutely nothing to do with this attack. 100% we had nothing to do with this. The Biden administration says, yes, you did. And we are going to attack you in some way in our choosing. How we decide to do it, we're not going to tell you. But of course, we are going to do it.
Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow.
But it's coming.
But one of these days, you're going to turn around and we're going to be there.
So, you know, you might be sitting there saying, who cares about this, whatever. You think about the American men and women who are literally sitting ducks right now being used as cannon fodder. They're sat there on purpose as targets right now. We know that this is going to escalate. We know that they're sitting there illegally in these countries. Get them out of there. Bring these people home for the love of God. Get these people home to their families and start protecting the United States on our own southern border. And let these guys are sitting there like sitting ducks right now being attacked and killed. And it's going to happen more. And the Biden administration knows it. And they're going to use this as a rallying cry, a false flag, of course, to drive us further and further into war. Let us know what you think about this.
Okay, there's a comment here that I see that says this was a false equivalency, that it's okay for Israel to have nukes, but these other countries should not, because Israel's not going around using these nuclear weapons. Okay, when did Iran use nuclear weapons?
Yeah, when has Iran used a nuclear
weapon? When has Iraq or Jordan? I missed that. So maybe I was asleep. For the last decade, I've been,
I've
been pregnant a lot. Maybe it was during one of my pregnancies. I must have missed that one.
Well, and we know from the documentation, and we know the truth of the matter is actually from actual weapons inspectors that Iran's uranium enrichment program was meant for the benefit of nuclear energy. Totally different program.
Right.
And that's been verified.
We showed you video of the IAEA saying that Iran, we have met all of our inspections and we are satisfied with the level to which they're enriching in radium, and we've seen and accounted for every ounce.
The United States wrote the law on this with the IAEA, and Iran has literally met every standard according to the International Atomic Energy Agency that we have set out. The laws that we have written, they have adhered to, and they have not violated any of them.
So now, I don't remember the IAEA giving us full reports on Israel's nuclear arsenal. We only know about it because it was hit accidentally on October 7th. That's the last time they've admitted, but they've been torturing a whistleblower since the late 80s, Mordecai Vanunu, He can't leave the country and has been falsely imprisoned several times for breaking no crimes. So if you want to come to me and say that they're doing great things with their nuclear weapons, whereas other people are, I'm just wondering where you get that.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, so curious. So curious.
Hey, and also just FYI, Dennis Kucinich is running for Congress again. So he said that on Twitter.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, whoa, I like him. Right. I think Ohio's seventh, I think.
Seventh.
District?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. I didn't know, like in a race. But yeah, I like Dennis a lot. I've interviewed him many, many times. A really nice guy. It's interesting to see, because if you watch that full piece, I watched that full congressional testimony today from 2002. 2002 was eye-opening to watch as they were trying to drumbeat us into the war in Iraq. And before he asked that question of Benjamin Netanyahu, like a few minutes before that, he's very he's very sycophantic towards Benjamin Netanyahu. It's like, I just want to, share my love and respect for you. And just want to, so there was a lot of fawning going on there. I know that question makes it look like he's trying to get to the heart of the matter. So we'll see. I'd love to talk to Dennis and we'll invite him on the show. He's not afraid to do interviews like other people are. So we've got more news to get to here on your Monday.
Yes, coming up, we're going to invite a guest on. We invited Ramzi Baroud to talk to us about the new, I wouldn't say sanctions, the overall halting of aid to Gaza based on Israel's assertion about the United Nations and their role in the October 7th attack. We're also going to talk about who are the hostages that are going to be exchanged between the hostages that are in Gaza and the hostages that are in Israel. Because one side gets a lot of discussion. We know a lot about the Israeli hostages. What do we know about who Israel has to exchange? We're going to talk about that as well. We're also going to talk about coming conscription for basically every NATO country. You're going to war against Russia, whether you like it or not, based on some truly fictitious premises, but okay. And we're also going to look at Maui, because they continue to be forgotten after these fires, and something strange going on there. Something afoot. Strange things afoot. Yeah, at the Circle K.
We got some super chats. Thank you for your super chats. And someone says, who owns Redacted? We do, actually. Natalie and I do. We have a small little company here. Why didn't you get canceled so far? We've been canceled how many times now? Like three or four times? They've blocked us, banned us. Four times. They've taken us off of YouTube for 2 weeks at a period.
We get hand slapped a lot.
We've gotten so many videos in the past couple of weeks slapped. I've had to write to YouTube and I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, what is happening here? Why is this happening to us? So, I mean, I don't know. Who the hell knows? But we have a huge Rumble base. We have a huge Rumble fan audience over on Rumble who's watching us right now. 15,000 of you watching us on Rumble. So thank you there. And thank you to all your super chats here. Someone's Anwar Abu Bakr says, don't let these comments get to you. Saddam was actually more compliant with weapons inspections than Israel has ever been.
That's true. That's true.
That is actually true.
Yeah. Read your history.
Yeah, you might not like it, but that's actually accurate. So thank you
for that.
All right, let's get to more news, but first
we want to tell you about our friends over at Bio Optimizers, because January is here. Can you believe it? And how are you doing with those New Year's resolutions? Do you remember them? Well, if it was to focus on your well-being, then of course you know that you need to continue to focus on a good night's sleep. So if you could do just one thing to improve your sleep and overall well-being, it would be taking the number one mineral for sleep, which is magnesium, and we're specifically talking about Magnesium Breakthrough by Bio Optimizers. The seven different forms of magnesium in this supplement are involved in over 300 enzymatic reactions in the body. Pretty much every function in your body gets upgraded when you take magnesium, from the quality of your sleep to your brain function, from metabolism to stress levels. And let's face it, even if your 2024 resolution is not to focus on your health, but you just want to smash some goals, take names, succeed in life, well, then of course you know you need great sleep and stress management. So do yourself a favor and make Magnesium Breakthrough part of your daily routine this year so you can get the vitality you need to conquer your dreams. Go to biooptimizers.com/redacted right now. Enter promo code redacted to get 10% off any order. Again, that's biooptimizers.com/redacted. Is Israel telling the truth about aid to the United Nations after a ruling last Friday that accuses them of a genocide in Gaza. So here is the news. On Friday, the International Court of Justice ruled that Israel must cease its attack on Gaza to prevent a genocide. But that won't mean anything unless Western countries adhere to this. Now the U.S. says it will stop aid to the United Nations after Israel accused some staff members of having been involved in the October 7th attack. So is that a diversion? Is that a false flag? What is going on here? We invited Palestinian American journalist and researcher and author Ramzi Baroud to discuss. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Nat.
So I guess let's start with the court ruling and then move our way into the United Nations bit. So can you tell me your response to the court ruling? And then if you think these things are related, this accusation.
Absolutely. I think there are different ways of looking at the ruling by the ICJ. One is that this is really the first time in history in which an international legal system manages to find, or institution manages to find its way through the pressures of Western governments, namely the United States, and to actually compose something that could be understood as a tacit indictment of Israel with the potential of an actual indictment in the future. And that explains the sense of euphoria that exists right now, the dancing from South Africa to elsewhere of those who would like to see a just world that does not seem to be focused intently on punishing African leaders, Middle Eastern, you know, leaders and that sort of thing, because that's what it really seems that the ICC and the ICJ have existed for throughout all these years. They are going after the Global South. And suddenly we are seeing that there is a different type of accountability in the making. And that's exciting. But the disappointment here comes from the different perception that we've had or wanted to have, because we are desperate, because the situation calls for it. And that is the urgency of the genocide in Gaza. People are dying in very large numbers on a daily basis. And there is a famine underway. And there are entire communities that actually ran out of homeless cats and dogs because people are hunting down stray animals to eat them to survive.
Will
the ICJ ruling make any difference in that regard? Unfortunately not. And that's where what you started with here is critical. And it's just mind-boggling that the ICJ comes and says, you know, there is a ground for possible genocide here, and we are going to investigate. This is very serious business, what's happening in Gaza. And the very governments that established the ICJ, supported and funded the ICJ, in fact, created the very legal structure according to which the ICJ conducts itself, are now participating in worsening the existing genocide in Gaza by cutting off the only line of defense that Palestinians have against famine, which is UNRWA. All the food that is allowed to Gaza, which is about 2% of the needed food needed in Gaza right now, comes mostly through UNRWA.
Okay, let me just clarify what you're saying here. That's the United Nations Aid, Relief Works Agency. Right, that the United States has now said, well, there's some interesting things going on there, so we may have to halt aid right now. And so
we could talk about these interesting things, but the fact is UNRWA is the only party that the world says we are willing to work with these guys. We don't want to work with Hamas. We don't want the controversy that comes with working with the Hamas government in Gaza. So UNRWA is kind of the middleman. They are the ones who are facilitating the aid that comes, that trickles into Gaza, again, about 2-3% of the total need of Gaza. And yet this 2% is now going to be cut off because the US, Germany, Britain, others have decided to stop funding UNRWA. And that happens a day after the ICJ said that there is a possible or plausible case for genocide in Gaza. And so the question is, what message are they sending? I mean, are they sending a message to Gaza or to the international legal system saying that we really don't care for you and your rulings, and none of this is of any relevance to us.
Well, that is exactly what they're saying. John Kirby over the weekend, Pentagon spokesperson, said, well, we think that the way we're going about this is getting good results, so we don't need these other bodies. We're okay. We got this, basically. I can't not laugh with that. Genocide word is unhelpful.
John, this ICJ ruling, it's going to be part of a global conversation on this conflict. Does the ruling and the subsequent proceeding, will it impact U.S. Policy or messaging at all?
Policy or messaging on what?
The conflict in Gaza. I mean, I know that you've stated, or the statement has said, that, you know, this goes in line with what you've been saying.
Yeah.
But going forward, do you believe that it will change you, will sway the president?
It's hard to see that. I mean, I think we'll have to watch. This is obviously just a provisional order by the court. We'll have to watch how the process plays out, but it's difficult to see that it alone is going to change the approach. As I said, the president believes the approach we have been taking has been getting results, and we're going to keep at that.
Do you think they even believe that they got this?
Well, of course not. But for them, this is about losing their power. I mean, the power of the U.S. in the Middle East comes through its own political diktats, its own political agenda, and the use of international organizations like the General Assembly, the Security Council, the UN Security Council, the ICC, the ICJ, for their own specific reasons, to go after Putin, to go after this Uganda president, to go after whomever. For this system to turn against them is completely unacceptable. This is why the U.S. repeatedly sanctioned ICC judges, for example, for daring even suggesting that possibly some human rights were violated in the invasion of Afghanistan, and possibly the U.S. has violated the rules of war in the West Bank and so forth. For the mere suggestion, even before the case was officially opened, 7 or 9, I can't remember exactly, ICC judges were sanctioned by the U.S. federal government. So this is about losing power, losing control, because they are losing the war and losing the narrative that comes from the war.
And so if we are then voting with our dollars, is what the United States is saying, like, oh, well, we might not want to put some money there because there's some accusation. What occurred to me is, why do we keep funding the World Health Organization when we know that they have abused human rights in Congo? They admitted to all of that sexual assault. So we give money to people who are accused only if it serves our purpose. That doesn't make any sense. I know that I'm not here to ask you about the WHO, but that just seems to me such hypocrisy. Now, there have been reports that there is possibility of a 2-month ceasefire in order to exchange hostages. And, you know, the Israeli hostages, they get a lot of press. We know who they are. We know their terrible stories. We know that their families are suffering and begging Netanyahu to please do this. What we don't know a lot about, and something that I think a lot about, is the Palestinian hostages that had been in Israel's custody for years. The media calls them prisoners. I don't like that. I think that's not necessarily fair. A lot of them are children and women. So can you tell me a little bit about the story of who Israel has to exchange, why they have them to exchange, and why Hamas wants them back?
There are nearly 5,000 Palestinian hostages that have been held in Israel prior to October 7th. Now, this is, you know, some of them leave, others enter the system, but at any given point, there are thousands of Palestinian detainees inside Israel for various reasons. Some of them are accused of carrying out military operations against the Israeli army. Others are accused of posting or even liking a post on Facebook. Not even posting, but actually liking a post on Facebook or writing a poem and sharing it on Instagram that may have suggested that person supports resistance of any form. So it's not only ridiculous, but ludicrous as well, how this system works. And there is no international law that applies to Israel that is actually being implemented regarding the rights of these prisoners. Now, since October 7th, an additional 4,000 to 5,000 Palestinians in the West Bank have been imprisoned. Many of them are old prisoners, have been re-imprisoned again. Others are women and children There is, for example, a case of a Palestinian prisoner in the West Bank. She's a woman. She's a teacher, I believe, and she changed her status on WhatsApp to reflect something about Gaza, and she was arrested for it, and she is in prison, and she is being tortured. So it's appalling that it's been going on for such a long time, and all the attention is now going to the Israeli prisoners, and we know at least the remaining prisoners, the majority of them are actually IDF military men and women. The previous prisoners, we understand their stories, but those in Gaza right now are mostly within the Israeli army. Now, the other thing is that the Palestinian prisoner has always been completely marginalized in the way that the media coverage, especially in mainstream media. I wrote a book about Palestinian prisoners telling their own stories in their own way, called "These Chains Will Be Broken." Not a single American newspaper agreed to review the book or to even criticize the book. Just complete marginalization of the prisoners and any narrative that tries to place the prisoners or the hostages or the detainees within proper historical context. All of us are talking. Remember, the exact same thing happened when Gilad Shalit was taken hostage in Gaza, was detained in Gaza by the resistance many years ago. He was released in 2011 in exchange for 1,025 Palestinian prisoners. We did not hear a single word about the families of those Palestinians who have suffered in it. But we knew everything about Gilad Shalit, even though he was a soldier, and even though his job was to impose to be part of the siege on Gaza. We knew everything about his family, about his hopes and dreams and life and the music he liked and the food he disliked and so forth. Nothing about 1,025 Palestinian hostages in Israel. The exact same story, which is the context to October 7th. The context of a humiliation, marginalization, military occupation and siege that nobody wants to talk about. We insist, let's have a conversation in which does not involve name calling about why October 7th happened. It's not about defending anybody or it's not about justifying anything. Let's talk about what Guterres has referred to when he said October 7th did not happen in a vacuum. Can we please talk about the context of what is this non-vacuum that Guterres is talking about? And why was he attacked immediately when he dared suggest that there is another story to what's happening in Gaza, aside from what Hamas did or did not do on October 7th?
Do you think that this, the ability of Israel to take people captive, detain, is getting worse? Because the post-Zionist movement, where Jewish people were breaking down the Zionist narrative of being good to the Palestinian people or what have you, always involved poetry and theater. That was one of the main ways of resistance. So has that changed in modern times and we just missed it?
I think so. I mean, one thing that I insist on when I write about resistance, I keep saying resistance is not about guns and it's not about bullets. And it's not about Hamas rockets, whether they hit their targets or they don't. Resistance starts with the culture itself. And the Palestinian culture is essentially a culture of resistance. And I've written a great deal about the Palestinian culture of resistance. And in fact, in my mind, this is why Israel is collectively punishing Gazans, because they know that they have served as that kind of popular base for the Palestinian resistance. Their music, their art, their graffiti on the walls. I grew up in a refugee camp in Gaza. And I remember that when UNRWA, the UN agency we were talking about, used to bring to us once a year few notebooks and drawing book and few crayons, and that is what they would allocate to each student at refugee schools in the Gaza Strip, the first thing we would do is we would take our crayons and we would draw the Palestinian flag. And the Israeli soldiers knew it, so that they would be standing at every street connecting the schools back to the refugee camps to find out if the Palestinian kids are carrying the Palestinian flags that they have drawn on their drawing notebooks that comes from UNRWA. Because they were scared about that connection, that we are making connection through our flags, through our music, through our art, through our dance, through our food, through all of these cultural elements of resistance. And they will try to suppress it before it becomes a thing. And we would hide them. We would get caught. Quite often, we get beaten up by the soldiers. So this is why you have this mass arrest in the West Bank. They are trying not to catch the fighters. They don't catch fighters. They kill fighters in the West Bank. But those who get arrested are the popular base of the resistance in the West Bank. Those, the educators, the artists, the singers, the actors, the, you know, the social media activists, those who foment a revolution at a popular level. And that's what Israel is trying to crush, right? Or crush.
Okay. I appreciate that a lot, because I think that the media narrative is disproportionate, clearly what's served to us. And I guess let's consider for a minute that maybe Israel is telling the truth about these 12 people implicated in October 7th who are related to the Reliefs and Works Agency. Do you support an investigation? Does that change what should be done? I mean, I certainly don't think it justifies withholding aid to innocent people. So what then?
Right. That's an excellent question, Natalie, because a lot of people don't realize that UNRWA is the second largest employer in Palestine. The first, the largest employer is the Palestinian Authority. The second employer is UNRWA. Thousands, if not tens of thousands of Palestinians work for UNRWA. And the vetting process to work for UNRWA, they try to give jobs to Palestinian refugees to empower the community. But you can't possibly know every little thing that that person may or may not do in secret in his private time. It's just impossible. Even if indeed the Israeli claim, which has not been investigated by Germany or France or Britain or the United States, let's say that that claim that indeed 12 people who may have directly or indirectly been involved in October 7th, it doesn't justify shutting down an organization that is the second employer in Palestine and the only line of or lifeline for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Palestinian refugees. It's like someone discovers that, I don't know, the state government in Texas had an employer who did something that, you know, that allegedly wrong. We still don't know what Israel is talking about. You go and you shut down the state government. It just makes no sense. But there is, of course, the reasons. We know the reasons of why they are doing this. Because Israel really does want to starve Gaza to the point that they want them to run away to Egypt. And they have failed. In the last 120 days or so, they have failed. So if UNRWA continues to bring food and feed Gazans, they are staying. You need to cut off that final line in order for them to breach the walls and to jump into Sinai. And that's the end of Israel's problems. This is what it's all about. It's not the 12 who may have participated in October 7th.
Okay, I understand. I really appreciate your context on this a lot. You can follow Ramzi on X and his Telegraph channel. He posts a lot on there, and also his YouTube channel. So check out what he has to say. Thank you so much, as always, for your time and for coming on Redacted.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Well, I hope you appreciate that perspective. I think that he is a very unbiased journalist. His, you know, work is worth listening to. And hopefully you appreciate that perspective as well. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, we have, you know, all sorts of different viewpoints on the show. If you want an echo chamber, then you know, you can watch like CNN or Fox or something like that. So we try to bring on other, you know, other viewpoints on this show and be able to have a conversation about it here on Redacted always. So thank you for your feedback on that. There was somebody that asked a question just a moment ago, and I forgot to write it down, so I apologize. But it was good, and I meant to comment on it. But anyway, we have more news to get to here on your Monday.
We're going
to
talk about all NATO countries trying to draft their population into a civilian war to go to war with Russia based on lies total lies. We're going to break those down. We're also going to tell you about Maui, bring you an update on the Maui fires, that a story that seems to have sort of fizzled out, but not here at Redacted. We're going to keep following that. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo, because right now, you know, people who are trading stocks would like more money in your account, more profitable growth of their funds. Like if you're waiting to see what the Fed is going to do this week, right? And so maybe you aren't buying any stocks, you haven't bought any new commodities, you haven't bought any oil companies, you haven't bought any, you know, minerals companies, and you're just sitting there waiting. Well, what if your cash was sitting in this account? And with Moomoo, they've got a 5.1% APY account. Then right now, for a limited time, with an additional 3% APY on top of that, that's over 8% that you can be growing your account with just sitting there in your cash sweep account. So this is not invested money. This is not money that's actually in stocks. It's in your Moomoo account just waiting there and growing, which means you can receive a lot of money on that interest just by opening this account right now. And the best part is, I mean, you know, the account is great. Moomoo is a fantastic trading platform, but you're going to get also 15 free stocks when you sign up. Like if you have not opened your Moomoo account yet, go and do it. It's totally free. Open your account. And then when you make your initial deposits, you're going to get qualified for those 15 free stocks. Then you can sell those free stocks if you want. And then just keep the account and keep that money in your account and let it grow at 8.1% right now for that limited time. The 5.1% is normal, the base rate. The 3% is the 3-month limited time interest rate right now. So we're waiting on this stock market earnings seasons. We got really good news from a couple of companies over the past 24 hours. We saw some crazy data from SoFi. We're waiting, of course, on what happens with the Fed. Will interest rates go up or down? We're going to be watching it very, very closely. Apple, Tesla earnings as well. So right now, sign up. Go to redacted.inc/moomoo to get 15 free stocks when you sign up. Again, that's redacted.inc/moomoo today to get 15 free stocks plus that 8.1% interest cash sweep account.
Well, Ukraine says they have a massive army and they've rooted out all the corruption in their country. All good, you guys. Get out your military aid again. They fixed it. It's good now.
Oh, good.
Don't worry anymore. In an interview with German media this weekend, Zelensky said this about Ukrainian army. Now, we've been reporting for months that the army has resorted to dirty tricks and basically kidnapping people into the army, like this video that emerged this weekend from Odessa.
Just pulling a person off the bus. Yep, you're going to the army. You wanted to take the bus to work? Nope, sorry, you're going to the army.
There are reports of just dentists walking from their apartment to their office, and nope, they don't make it. Things like that. Now, again, we've been reporting it for ages, but only in the last, I want to say, 6 months has, not even that, maybe 4 months that mainstream media has said that this is true. We've reported that the average age of a soldier in Ukraine is 43 because so many men have died, so many young men. That's no longer conspiracy theory. But Zelensky this weekend went on German media and he says they've somehow got their numbers back up. Look at this. He says we have 880,000 troops. That's an army of almost a million. I'm glad he can round. Besides, we currently have a workforce of 30 million people, even though I can't provide the exact number. Some 6.5 million to 7.5 million people have moved abroad. And again, I can't give the accurate figure. I mean, what's accuracy when you're talking about people's lives? Also, where'd they get that extra 200,000 people? In December, he said that Ukrainian forces had about 600,000 people. Back when the war, just before the war broke out in February of 2022, they had about 260,000 people. Where do they all come from?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you wondering
so
about
now
that?
That's double or almost triple the amount that Russia has right now.
Yeah.
That's amazing that they called up.
It's like a Weekend at Bernie's thing.
Yeah. How'd that happen? Yeah, exactly. But so true.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful to think about. It's like the Mongolians were one of the first to actually think of psychological operations where they would put dummies on either side of their horsemen. So you're riding, right? And from afar, that you can't see that those are not actual men. They had like straw men on either side.
Yeah.
Of the Mongolian attacker. And so it would intimidate the enemy into giving up. So maybe this is something like that, but just instead of using straw dummies, it's using the internet.
Maybe. Maybe it's like we used inflatable tanks on D-Day to fake the landing north of where we landed in Normandy, mm-hmm. in Normandy beaches. We dropped inflatable tanks. So maybe that's, yeah, it's some sort of a psychological operation.
Right. Are they breeding them? Are they kidnapping them? Right. These are interesting questions. And if you're one of the 30 million people living in Ukraine, what he says right now, we have a workforce of 30 million people. So basically he's saying, I got a garden out back I can pick from. Right. All these 30 million working class people, working age people. If that were me, I'd be very concerned if I was not a man who had already been conscripted, because he's basically saying all those 30 million people are fair game for me to put into this war. Do you read it that way? Because that's how I did. And he doesn't seem to care who he sends into his head count. Ukrainian Army Lieutenant Colonel Nikolov says that they need the total mobilization of the entire male-female population over the age of 18, even forcing prisoners into the army, as it would be the only way that Ukraine cannot lose to Russia.
Сейчас главное не проиграть. Так вот для того, чтобы не проиграть, необходимо не просто провести план резерв, необходимы драконовские методы. Как я это вижу? Это тотальная мобилизация всех, всего мужского и женского населения с 18 лет. Не обязательно это должна быть передовая, это может быть оборонные какие-то предприятия, это может быть тыл, логистика. Можно в какую-то другую обертку обернуть, там, резервисты и так далее. Но с 18 лет, включая женщин, необходимо привлечь заключенных для выполнения боевых задач.
Ув'язнених.
Так точно.
А яким чином це зробити? Це ж протирічить українському законодавству.
Йде війна 10 років. Неужели не навчились зробити зміну до законодавства?
So he acknowledges that the war has been going on for 10 years.
Right.
Which is, wow, that's an admission.
I definitely have some questions. I definitely have some questions.
Yeah,
first off,
away.
If you mobilize every man and woman over the age of 18, who's watching everybody under the age of 18? And two, let's say they do that, they eventually win, lose half that population. I mean, if that is not the definition of a Pyrrhic victory, I don't know what is. I mean, what do you do then? Let's say you win, what have you won?
Right, you have nothing left. Well, we already know they don't have anybody at home to watch. There are no children because, you know, we now know that there are no young people. Talk about a birth gap. Ukraine has a very large birth gap. There are very few young people. There are very few babies. And that's been the case for a number of years. The population, the largest population graph, if you look at a graph of Ukraine's population, it's well over 30s into the 40s. Like right. That's where the largest bubble is. But under no, they are not having babies in Ukraine.
Except in baby-making services. You can still order
a baby
in Ukraine. I have a friend.
Stuff like that. You need parts, you can get it, yeah.
Who was telling me that you can order a baby from Ukraine. She was offered one through one of her agencies, a friend who was suffering from infertility. They said they can guarantee twins. The way they do that is they stuff her so full of eggs, and then they abort at least a few of them that don't take. I mean, that's like cows, right?
Yeah.
So that does exist. But even with this Ukrainian...
Well, we featured the baby. I've done a whole segment here on right. The baby-making services in Ukraine.
That are still a thing, absolutely. But those babies are not yet old enough to fight, maybe in 18 years they can. In fact, this video is trending in Ukraine as a sick joke, where men are trying to escape getting kidnapped for the military by dressing as women.
Давай, йду тут чекати. Прошу вибачення, дівчата. Ой, пацани, там все місто в бусиках, в папках, я поки зібралась. Зібрався.
Так, пацани, півгодини до концерту, по 50 і в академічний.
Рахунок.
Хлопці, ви якщо щось нове придумаєте, не пишіть то у Телеграм, ми то все читаємо. Та я жартую, хлопці, я теж на концерт.
Okay, so that's not funny, right? But you can see why this would trend. Is because they're all worried about being grabbed and thrown into what we're called a meat grinder. Now, in the same interview we're telling you about, Zelensky said that if the West stopped sending military aid, it would be a bad signal. Here's what he said. He says passivity from the United States or lack of support would be a bad signal. Germany can manage to consolidate the EU. That's interesting, right? European citizens, you're all good because Germany's leading you into the war. He can basically bully all of Europe. Germany can, Olaf Scholz. But I'm really worried about Biden, is basically what he's saying. Germany can manage to consolidate the EU. Many countries have important economic relationships with Germany. Basically, I got Germany. They're good. They're going to bully the rest of Europe. I'm good on this. It's the United States he's worried about. He says there are individual Republicans who do not support Ukraine, but the vast majority of Democrats and Republicans in the United States, he means, support Ukraine. Well, why would someone oppose aid to Ukraine? Could it be because it's a death sentence for innocent people in order to take back land that Ukraine has been attacking for 10 years, according to that man we just showed you who admits it? Once again, if you believe the lies about the wars in Ukraine, let me just remind you, Ukraine has been bombing and attacking the people of the Donbas since 2014. The mayors of those regions asked Russia to protect them in 2022, and Russia finally decided to do that in March of 2022. It was not an attack aimed to take over all of Europe on the whim of Putin. Russian parliament voted on the requests of those mayors. Now, Ukraine wants to take that territory back, presumably to keep torturing those people, and Russia is holding the line, and innocent Ukrainians are dying for this horrid cause. So let's revisit the map. We were told that Ukraine on the counteroffensive starting last June would be taking back this region. The region you see there in red has not changed from June until now, despite all the lives lost, all the money thrown at it. Those are the regions that Ukraine has been attacking since 2014 that asked Russia to come in and stop those attacks and offer them to join Russia just like Ukraine, or just like Crimea did. No progress, because this is a pointless war and always has been, especially because Ukraine has always been corrupt. Take a look at this article from 2015. We have known this. The International Monetary Fund was warning that Ukraine had to stop its corruption or they would stop money. Well, don't worry about all that, because Ukraine has hired a corruption investigator and he's on it, you guys. So over the weekend, he says he found another $40 million that was stolen by the sale of weapons that never were. This is in addition to the $262 million that they said they'd already uncovered in fraud earlier this month. It's worth noting this is an internal investigation by the Ukrainian military. Corrupt army investigates itself. Great. The U.S. has not shown any interest in investigating fraud in Ukraine, though, even when bills are introduced by, Rand Paul. Who else? The guy in Florida, Matt Gaetz, has introduced bills to track weapons and aid. No, not interested. We're not interested. Let the corrupt people investigate themselves. We have full confidence in that. Full faith. All good.
Well, that kind of funny that the military does their own investigation of the military and they find millions of dollars. Like, that's just kind of funny.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, maybe they can
say, like, sorry about the delay. We have a delay sometimes. Go ahead. I'm done.
I was going to say, maybe they can come over to the United States and audit the United States Pentagon, which can't find $1 trillion in its budget. They can't find tens of billions of dollars, you know, on a regular basis. So maybe they could come over here and help us figure it out where our money is, too.
Right. In the meantime, NATO countries are just screaming about getting ready for a military draft for a war with Russia, presumably because Ukraine is not winning. We thought we'd have a big celebration around Ukraine getting that. I don't know why we would ever have thought that, but we thought that Ukraine would get that land back. We'd still have Russia the boogeyman. We'll high-five ourselves. We did the right thing. Since that's not happening, now they're saying all NATO countries need a war with Russia, because that will fix it, I guess. They just escalate. So let's see. Last week, we told you about the UK military warning about needing a civilian army. Sweden said the same thing. And over the weekend, this was in Sky News Australia, Australian media started to up this rhetoric too. They're saying, yep, you know, we still have time. The defense contractors there are saying, well, we're the only non-NATO country that's really stepping up to a war with Russia. We got to get ready. The Telegraph over the weekend presented this doomsday scenario. I'm sorry, that's not a good screen. I'm going to read you that part at the bottom to show you what I want you to see. It says, it is 2034 and Britain is at war with Russia. After an uneasy peace with Ukraine, Moscow has sent forces into the Baltics, clashing with British troops based there to protect NATO's eastern flank. Well, why exactly would Russia do this? No explanation. They're just telling us this hypothetical scenario that there was peace in Ukraine. Okay, Russia's been offering that for 2 years. So how did that happen in this hypothetical? And Russia has upped an attack in the Baltic? Why exactly?
Well, they've been offering this for 10 years, peace in this region.
Good point. Good catch. So with all of this doomsday rhetoric, you know, this is dishonest. You would think that Russia would just give up on the West and say, well, they're perpetuating and swallowing a lot of lies. We can't deal with them. But for some reason, Russia has some kind of faith in the West, mercifully. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said that Russophobia is at an all-time high right now, but it will cool off, like skinny jeans, kind of. Look at this quote saying, he's talking about the West. Their economic problems are obvious. The competitiveness of the famous German industry is declining. The cost of living is rising. The economic and social pressure is increasing. Yeah, that's what's happening to us in the West. Feels crappy, doesn't it? He went on to say that this Russophobia will have some inertia, and several decades, it will likely pass. Right now, Russophobia is at its peak. It will go down. It will happen someday, and common sense will gradually prevail. So we're all supposed to be feeling the pain of what our leaders have done, which is destroy our economy for a war based on a lie. And he says, eventually they'll see through it, and they'll realize there was no reason to be scared of the Russians or hate the Russians for no reason. But it will take several decades. And we, in the meantime, will be manipulated by politicians using Russia as a scapegoat right on cue. I mean, it's nice for him to say that about us, that we will eventually wake up. I hope it's true. But in the meantime, Nancy Pelosi, right on cue, did exactly that, used Russophobia to blame for the war that Israel is currently raging on Gaza.
They're in front of my house all the time. So I have a feeling for what feelings they have. But we have to think about what we're doing. And what we have to do is try to stop the suffering in Gaza. This is women and children, people who don't have a place to go. So let's address that. But for them to call for a ceasefire is Mr. Putin's message. Mr. Putin's message. Make no mistake, this is directly connected to what he would like to see. Same thing with Ukraine. It's about Putin's message. I think some of these protesters are spontaneous and organic and sincere. Some, I think, are connected to Russia. And I say that having looked at this for a long time now, as you know.
You think some of these protests are Russian plants?
I don't think they're plants. I think some financing should be investigated. And I want to ask the FBI to investigate that.
Yeah, so, okay, Russiagate. So these people who are protesting are Russian propagandists. They're Putin propagandists in the United States.
That's how she's connecting a war between the Palestinians and Israel.
I mean, we know that.
I mean, I'm going to say a bad word. I'm going to warn you. She's a dumb bitch if she thinks that we're going to buy that. And you're a dumb bitch if you buy that. That's the stupidest thing I've heard in a long time. And we watch a lot of news and listen to stupid things.
I know. It's pretty hard
to top
some of the stuff we've seen. And a lot of people in the chat agree with you. And they're all calling her that same exact name, by the way.
Okay.
Go ahead, David.
She had activists in her driveway asking for a ceasefire. I don't know if you saw that video. And she was telling them, go back to China. So it's like China and Russia.
Go back to China.
Yeah.
And Russia. Yeah, it's Putin. It's a Putin message. So anything that's going, just like it was Putin's price hike, you know, while you're paying more for gasoline and groceries, it's Putin's price hike. It's Putin's message. Okay.
Okay, so I think what I'm advocating for here is don't be manipulated by politicians that try to make false equivalency connections. Read it for yourself, and that is stupid. And if you do not want your family drawn into war, like the poor Ukrainians have been, well, war based on a lie, it's time to speak up now. It's now. Now is the time. So let us know what you think of this in the chat below. We have more news to get to. We're going to talk about, the Maui fires that have sort of fizzled out of media, but have not fizzled out of our purview. We're going to talk about what's really happening there. All of that and more. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital, because it's no secret if you're tuned in, then you know experts are predicting a recession heading our way. Layoffs are already happening and the government is ready to print more money, further devaluing the U.S. dollar. We're waiting to see what the Fed does this week with interest rates. We'll know by Wednesday. Up, down? I don't know. It's a gamble, right? The whole U.S. economy is. Well, last year was terrible for most investors, but 2024 could be even worse. Unless you're looking into investing in gold, then you were protected from their loss while other investments fell. And if a recession is coming, well, then the next year is going to look even better for gold and silver. So if you're interested in investing in gold, then our friends over at Lear will help you start purchasing precious metals or converting part of your IRA or 401k into gold and silver IRA. Call Lear Capital today at 800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Right now, if you buy 1 ounce of gold, Lear Capital is giving away a free ounce of silver, and that's incredible. Literally free silver that you can keep or sell immediately. There are lots of gold companies to choose from, and Lear Capital has over 25 years of experience and thousands of five-star reviews and a risk-free guarantee that gives you 24 hours to review your purchase before committing. So one more time, go to LearRedacted.com or pick up the phone and call. Talk to a real person. That might make you feel more at ease. 800-613-3557. Once again, LearRedacted.com or 800-613-3557.
Has the Biden administration abandoned the people of Lahaina, Hawaii, after devastating wildfires tore through that town, destroyed countless businesses, homes, lives? Now the people of Lahaina are trying to rebuild, but do they have the help of the Biden administration, and has America largely forgotten this story? Where are the missing children? Where are the missing people? Will these people be able to return to their homes and rebuild, or are big businesses swooping in and buying up this land? This is a story that's been on our minds for many, many months. And Nick Sorter, independent journalist, is in Lahaina, and we were able to catch up with him near a roadblock, who's been doing some amazing journalism there. Nick, great to see you. Welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Clayton.
So you arrived there a short time ago, a few days ago, to see and assess what's been happening in Lahaina. Just your impressions upon returning to this area now. How many months has it been since these devastating wildfires have hit?
So it's been over 5 months now. And if you talk to practically any resident that is here at this point, they're incredibly frustrated, and honestly, nothing has gotten better. If anything, it's gotten worse, okay? The Biden administration has come in here and they're running businesses out of here. The Small Business Administration promised over 5 months ago thousands of people relief loans, and they still have not paid out. So they're forced off the island at this point. They're given every excuse in the book to say, you know, why the money hasn't cleared yet. And, you know, all of it it's a bunch of BS. And so the people here at this point believe that this is all intentional, and it's really just a way to drive them off the island by choking them out. And it's terrifying to think about that, you know, the government and, you know, FEMA and such are supposed to be helping these people. It's not their fault. They didn't do this. Okay, they're a victim of, at a very minimum, government incompetence that let the fire burn down the entire town. It's not their fault. But now they are totally suffering. And honestly, Clayton, I wish I could say it's getting better. It's not. It's getting worse.
Well, what's amazing to me, because during COVID, you know, small business loans, you could get the loan without even, frankly, proving that you even have a business, right? They were sending money out, right, billions of dollars out to people, but the people of Lahaina somehow can't get access to these loans to help them rebuild. It seems hypocritical. Seems odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely seems odd. And, you know, the fact that we're talking over 5 months at this point, and you're hearing excuses from like the SBA saying, oh, well, you know, it was supposed to clear, but, you know, we had a software update which caused a bunch of problems in our systems. And, oh, well, your loan's being reviewed by a supervisor now, and you should hear back within 1 to 2 months. I mean, it's like, it's almost a joke, and nobody's holding these people accountable. And luckily we have, you know, people like you that are willing to actually air this stuff now, because honestly, the mainstream media is nowhere to be found here. I'm the only guy with a camera at this point. Nobody wants to talk about Lahaina at this point. I guess it's not a sexy story anymore. And so, but what happens in that case, as you very well know, once you stop hassling the government, they're going to totally shaft these people. That's what they do in every situation like this. This is no different.
Well, hopefully we can continue to press the government to make these people whole and take care of these people over their incompetence and you know, and what happened there. Can you describe what you've been seeing over the past few days? You're standing, can you explain where you are and what's behind you, and just describe some of the conversations you've been having with the people of Lahaina?
Yeah, so we're standing in front of one of many roadblocks out here. You are still not able to, if I were to walk past the barrier that's right behind the camera here, I would be arrested immediately, as would anybody that, they give out permits every once in a while to residents. You get a 1 week permit from FEMA and that's it. Then you can't go in to your property after that, which is insanity. You're not allowed to rebuild on your own property. You have to wait for government approval to do any of that, and they have not approved a single permit for anybody to do that, insurance company or otherwise. None of them are allowed in either, so you can't even get adjusters in there to actually help these people get paid out. And you're like, why are they stonewalling?
Yeah, why are they stonewalling? That was going to be my question. Why are they telling people they can't return, they can't start cleaning up and start rebuilding? We see it immediately after tornadoes and hurricanes. There's people, the whole communities come together and pick up debris and start rebuilding immediately.
Right. So that's one of the things that a lot of these people are thinking in their minds, is that this is all a setup. It's a land grab. They're trying to force these people out and choke them out so that they can't, you know, actually afford to stay. That's one of the biggest concerns. And honestly, a lot of people, and I didn't want to believe that in the beginning either. You know, when I first came here back last year, and a lot of people that live here, obviously they didn't want to believe that either. But the more and more people I talk to, that's kind of the conclusion that they have to draw at this point, because it's either absolute gross incompetence on behalf of the government, or they're doing this intentionally. And at this point, everybody believes that this is intentional and that this is a land grab.
Yeah, they've been 5 months now with their businesses destroyed. They're without a home. So where are these people living, and how are these people going to provide for their families, their way of life? We know small stores, small grocery stores, small businesses have all been destroyed in that area, and the government is not helping them. They can't get insurance payouts. They can't get information about their homes. I'm using the word abandoned because that's exactly what it feels like to me.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of them do feel like they have been abandoned, and absolutely. And you're asking where a lot of these people are staying. I mean, about a mile down the road here, you have a park that's right on the beach where there's literally a tent city that has been set up for people that have been displaced, that aren't getting any aid. And, you know, it goes beyond just people that lost their houses in the fire, because, you know, there's a housing shortage here to begin with. And so FEMA has now been driving rents through the roof, and so people that weren't originally victims of the situation are now being evicted because FEMA is paying, you know, at least 130% of what the rent was prior. So a lot of the people that are now homeless and living on the beach in tents are people that didn't even have their houses burned down. They're a victim of a secondary crisis that's being created by the Biden administration and FEMA.
Wow. So that's fascinating. I haven't heard that. So these individuals being pushed out of homes that they were paying for and they were renting, the landlords then are evicting them in favor of FEMA prices. It's almost like converting your house to an Airbnb because you know you could somehow make more money. So you drive out long-term renters. Am I hearing you correctly?
Absolutely, you are. Absolutely, you are. Yeah, and I know people personally at this point that are in this situation, that are being evicted. And, you know, there's supposed to be an eviction moratorium. However, that's not being enforced by any means. And so it kind of hits home when, you know, these people that I met back months ago that were, you know, trying to just get through the situation, and, you know, they were doing fairly well with it. They were coping, and now all of a sudden they're being thrown out on the street. It's mind-boggling to me that we're letting this happen in the United States of America. I don't get it.
We've heard official death numbers right around 99, but when you talk to the people of Lahaina, we've obviously covered the missing children story many, many months ago, accounting for all the people that have gone missing, who are killed. Do those numbers sound correct to the people of Lahaina, 99 people?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, this is the only disaster that I've ever seen where the official death count has dropped by 30%. And you know, people here tend to believe that it's in the range of at least 300 to 400, and the official count is 99. However, the government gives very few details on who those 99 people are. We have no idea how many of them are children. We have no idea how many that way. Like, we don't even know the names of all of these people that have been confirmed dead. You know, they're really, the lack of transparency is driving people crazy, and it's really hurting the situation based on the fact that nobody trusts anybody at this point. Nobody trusts anything the government is saying, and it's causing chaos in the community. It's awful.
What has the Biden administration response been? Have they given you any indication when they plan to arrive? When is President Biden going to touch down with Air Force One and do a big tour of the community?
Well, so the Biden administration is very silent on this issue right now. They're not talking about it at all because they know that this is a total cluster. I mean, you look at East Palestine, Ohio. That is very similar to what's going right on here, where they're basically just trying to sweep it under the rug, and they just want it to go away because it's a political nightmare for Joe Biden. And I mean, just like East Palestine, Ohio, he's totally neglected these people out here. And I mean, you're talking, these are really good, nice, hardworking people. What, you know, Lahaina is a historic town. You know, their families have been here for generations and generations in these homes that have burned down, and they all feel abandoned by the government at this point. And I don't see that getting better anytime soon unless there are some drastic changes here.
Nick Sorter, middle of the night, before sunrise there in Lahaina. Don't get arrested. Just walking around, seeing what the damage is. It's unbelievable. The government won't let you see what's going on there. And putting out, you know, you'll be arrested if you set foot on this land. Something very fishy continues to unfold in Lahaina. Nick, thanks for your great reporting on this. We appreciate it. And thanks for keeping this story front and center.
Thank you for having me on, Clayton. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Nick. We appreciate it. Yeah, middle of the night there in Hawaii when we were able to catch up with him earlier. So thanks so much. We really appreciate that. And it's such an important story to stay on top of. Thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our show here. We really appreciate it. Thanks for following us. It's totally free to subscribe. So please, if you're not already a subscriber, please do that. I know that YouTube every like month goes through and like deletes people's subscriptions for a lot of people. We hear from people all the time in the chat room that are like, I subscribed to your show. And then they go and they find out that YouTube has like unsubscribed them. It's like, okay, do I get to choose who I subscribe to and who I don't? Thanks, YouTube. And our friends over at Rumble as well. Thank you guys so much for following us over there. We really appreciate it. Don't forget, of course, to sign up for our free newsletter. That goes out first thing in the morning. You should all sign up for that. It's totally free. Just go to redacted.inc. Put in your email address. You'll receive a welcome email from me. and just from my email, clayton@redacted.inc. And then drag it over into your inbox. You know, it might go in your spam folder, it might wind up in your junk folder, whatever. Just drag it over to your inbox. And then tomorrow morning, on Tuesday morning, you'll receive the newsletter at about 7 a.m., 7:30 in the morning. And we cover about four or five of the big stories of the day. Again, totally free. It's our way to stay connected with you because these big tech platforms love to censor us and block us. And at least it's a way for us to stay connected to you outside of these big platforms. So thanks so much, everyone. All right, everyone. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone.